We're going to have a look and see what happened on this day. Well, in 1901, Skipper's Bridge opened, the 96 metre long and 91 metre high. It was a suspension bridge over the Shotover River near Queenstown in central Otago, New Zealand here. One of the most spectacular bridges in New Zealand. Also on this day in 1942, the 29th of March, a Nazi sabotage hoax. During the Second World War, convicted con man Sidney Gordon Ross, he duped New Zealand's intelligence service, the SIS, into believing that Nazi agents were planning to carry out a sabotage in New Zealand. Also on this day in 1959, evangelist Billy Graham arrived for an 11-day crusade. In the first half of 1959, Billy Graham and his associate evangelists Leighton Ford, Grady Wilson and Joseph Blinko held crusades in New Zealand and Australia. Let's move across to News Hub now, looking at the top stories there. Disgusted and heartbroken, an Auckland woman contacted the council about roaming dogs and then hers was taken. Other headlines, chase the better drugs, Kiwi mates commuting to Australia for cancer treatment not funded by New Zealand. And evil campers. Vehicles totally smashed after a man does the late night burnouts. And the treaty thing, Goldsmith denies breaking law over Te Papa letter. Horrifying scene, person dead after a serious assault in Auckland's North Shore and Browns Bay. One stabbed and the other one killed himself. And a peer accused of the Lower Hutt siblings abuse case, they plead not guilty in court yesterday. Pacific Island News, former Fiji Prime Minister avoids jail in a court case. He says, I'm on top of the world. Christchurch, a man's been arrested after a drug lab discovered in Christchurch. Environment, government scrapped long contested Kermadec ocean sanctuary plans. Shane Jones has stepped into the ring and said, no, we're not doing that. There's 620,000 square kilometres of fishing grounds and we're not going to foil that. Food and drink, the warehouse, they removed the Easter eggs after a customer reported finding rocks inside her chocolate. Other news from newshub.co.nz. Camilla gives update on the Kate Middleton's cancer treatment. And a hate crime, according to the police, they execute search warrant after Rainbow Crossing at Auckland's K Road was vandalised. Pig Dolphin Boy, there's a bit of a stoush there with Sean Plunkett and Cam Slater. They sling heated insults over an on-air Down syndrome joke, which went horribly wrong for Sean Plunkett. High-ranking public servant denies personally intervening in Fred Again case, says she's subject to hate mail. And, so we've got, they're scrapping the Kermadec thing, that's Shane Jones. Idiots, Deputy Prime Minister, act facing criticism over damaging segregation comments about anti-safe spaces. Brutal. In politics, almost half of the Ministry of People's Pacific People's force is to be cut, 40% I think, under proposal. In education, Stanford disagrees with Peter's claim, Auckland University's special area for Maori and Pacific students or Pacifica students, is segregation. Cost of living, the Reserve Bank signals lower interest rates could be coming soon. Adrian Orr is the man there. In supermarkets, fruit and vegetable prices drop, but shoppers still feel the pain. Melissa Chan Green, she lashes out at incredibly chauvinist viewer comments to do with childcare. Cost of living, the government agency is referring needy Kiwis to unfunded food bank. And the All Black legend, BG, that's Brian, what's his name? Oh, gosh, name gone out of my head. He's gone into the the Pacific Rugby Hall of Fame. We'll have a look, we'll play that. We'll see if we can play a News Hub one. Sometimes, usually they don't have the volume up loud enough. Here we go.
Biggest names in rugby are gathering at Eden Park tonight to celebrate the Pacific's immense contribution to the sport. Seven legendary Pacifica players will become the first to be formally inducted into the Pacifica Rugby Hall of Fame. Our rugby reporter Ollie Ritchie is there for us and joins us live with one of the first inductees. Ollie.
I certainly am, Andrew. What a night for Pacific Rugby, and it should surprise no one to learn who one of the first inductees into the Pacifica Rugby Hall of Fame is. I don't think the word legend quite does this man justice, but he is with us now, BG Sir Brian Williams. Thank you so much for your time. Congratulations, first of all. What does it mean to you to be one of the first inductees into the Pacifica Rugby Hall of Fame?
Well, as you can imagine, I'm very honoured, very humbled, but I guess I've been around a long time, so... I'm very happy about it.
How would you describe the impact of Pacific rugby in recent years?
Well, I guess when I started, there weren't many Pasifika players playing at the top level. And when I first made the All Blacks in 1970, there had been other players who'd gone before, but very spasmodic. And I guess, you know, going to South Africa was pretty daunting, apartheid South Africa. But I had quite a good tour. And then over time, you know, many players of Pacific heritage started playing top-level rugby. And I've said before that the trickle became a flood.
And we're seeing now Moana Pacifica, the Fijian Drua in Super Rugby. I mean, can you feel a real growth in Pacific rugby, a real lift in Pacific rugby even now?
Absolutely. You know, the journey to get into Super Rugby has been a long one. And you know, that's fairly well documented. But now that both those teams are there, I think both teams are excitement machines, generally speaking. And it's wonderful to see.
Fiji, thank you so much for your time tonight. We really appreciate it. It is a big weekend for Super Iron. Moana Pacifica here tomorrow night, 150th jubilee of his beloved Ponsonby Rugby Club as well. Lot to celebrate first of all tonight though, Andrew.
Thank you very much, Ollie. And yes, as you quite rightly point out, a big, big weekend ahead for Super Iron and Ponsonby Rugby. I don't know quite how Sir BG's going to handle it, quite frankly, team, but it's a big, big one for him. Great stuff.
Well, there we are. That report's brought to you by newshub.co.nz. And get in while they're still going before they finish on the 30th of June, I believe. It'll be all over for them. Let's see if there's any other hot news over here at newshub.co.nz. Doesn't look like it. Good old Brian Williams. He was a nice guy. Met him, sold him a property up in the Bay of Islands. And he's a very, very nice chap when I met him. Gosh, he's aged a bit. I suppose we all have, haven't we? If I look in the mirror, I give myself a fright. Let's see. It's all old news there. Let's go to Sky News. Shall we see if they've got... Oh, they might have something new. Let's see. We'll go to Sky News, see what the latest is there. Why don't we have a listen to this one? This is Harry.
Queen Camilla gave a rare public update on Kate Middleton's well-being during a visit to a farmer's market. She said the princess would be thrilled by all the kind well wishes and support.
Hello. Oh, I shall certainly say Catherine will be thrilled. Hello, Senator. Yes.
Joining me now is GB News host and founder of Reasoned UK, Darren Grimes. Darren, Queen Camilla is becoming a favourite as she supports King Charles and Kate during their respective cancer battles.
Absolutely, she definitely has. She's been a guiding light of that family. Even Prince William has had his struggles with her in the past. I don't think that's a secret as far as the royal court is concerned.
Yeah, because she's
actually
having an affair with
his mother.
Closer than
ever before. You know, Camilla has been working her socks off.
Mother's husband.
Whilst the king and, of course, the Princess of Wales are out of action. And, you know, a good friend of mine told me an anecdote of when he was on a British Airways flight when Camilla, back then, was still Camilla Shand. And he said that she was the most down-to-earth, fun individual that he'd ever encountered on a flight, in a random flight like that. And I think she is just a very, very nice, genuine person. But she's been there at a time when I think the nation is feeling a really quite profound sense of sorrow towards Princess of Wales and King Charles. And the king, in his Easter message, he stressed an importance of acts of friendship, especially in a time of need, talking about, you know, the Easter message being one of hard times and finding light, renewal, hope in times of darkness. And I think actually that goes for the nation as well, not just the royal family. I really feel that, you know, amidst all the darkness, actually a ray of light's been brought about. And Kate's message, Rita, I think was really an important one that's given a lot of people a lot of hope and encouragement.
Well, there was so much conjecture about Catherine's well-being. Obviously, before she made her statement. And there's been a few apologies since then, including from some very high-profile celebrities. But let's have a look at TV host Stephen Colbert's commentary about Kate before she announced her diagnosis and the apology or non-apology after.
The kingdom has been all flutter by the seeming disappearance of Kate Middleton. Well, now, internet sleuths are guessing that Kate's absence may be related to her husband and the future King of England, William, having an affair. We did some jokes about that mystery and all the attendant frou-fra in the reporting about that. And when I made those jokes, that upset some people. And even before her diagnosis was revealed. And I can understand that. I mean, a lot of my jokes have upset people in the past. And I'm sure some of my jokes will upset people in the future.
It was kind of a tortured apology, not apology, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is just another liberal lout, as far as I'm concerned. You know, what a disgusting thing to say. It wasn't a joke. I actually think he, you know, in reporting that, thought that he was giving some really cool, insightful gossip. But to accuse Prince William of having an affair at a time when actually he had the burden of having both his wife and his father battling cancer, of course, simultaneously, imagine the burden of that. It must almost be unbearable, but he continues to carry out his duties with the same kind of quiet dignity and the resolve that actually we've come to expect from him. And thank God he's the heir, Rita, and not the spare, because Prince Harry is anything but quiet, you know, ginge and the whinge over there. But he puts on a brave face in public, even as his personal life is in utter turmoil. So I actually think for Mr. Colbert and others, the royal family have just said to hell with them. They've come together. There is a real show of unity and strength. And I think, as we said earlier, Queen Camilla is a pillar of support for both Charles and Catherine. And I think that's a reminder that even in the face of pretty unimaginable adversity, I wouldn't be able to imagine myself in that scenario, having two loved ones going through the same disease. But actually, they're a beacon of resilience and fortitude. And that wasn't always the prediction, Rita, with this slimmed down monarchy that King Charles always wanted. Mm. But I think they're pulling through all right. I think they're emerging pretty strong and united. And that's even after Prince Harry and Meghan Markle have done all they can to ensure that wasn't the case.
There we are. That's taken from the Rita Panahi show over at Sky News. You can find them at skynews.com.au. All right, let's look at the weather and then we'll be off to do our jobs, won't we? Yep, let's do that. The latest temperatures at the moment, it's cooled off a wee bit in Kaitaia, 15.5 degrees, Twizel minus 0.5. 4 degrees, Nugget Point, 48 kilometres of wind, and Hastings has 0.4 millimetres of rain. Temperatures right across the country, Stewart Island's on 9 degrees along with Invercargill, Dunedin's on 8, 9 degrees at the Chathams, Queenstown has 7, 1 degree in Timaru, 6 in Christchurch, warmed up a bit there, got down to 2 degrees this morning. French Joseph on the west coast of the South Island have 3 degrees, Westport a little further north, 7 degrees, Nelson's on 10 and Blenheim is 3. Very chilly in Blenheim, but it's going to be sunny there today. In the North Island at the Wasp Nest in Wellington, 7 degrees down there. Things should warm up a bit later. Oh, it's holidays, isn't it? Easter, that's right, the pagan ceremony, the goddess of fertility. Masterton, 5 degrees. Napier has 10 degrees. Taupo, 11. Palmerston North's on 10. New Plymouth is 12. And it's next to Mount Egmont, too, if you're not sure where the New Plymouth is. Mount Egmont. Taupo, yep. And we've got Gisborne at 14. Rotorua's on 11 degrees. Hamilton has 13, Tauranga 14, Auckland 15, Whangarei also on 15, and Kaitaia at 15.5 degrees. The short forecast for all New Zealand valid until midnight tonight at 11 minutes past 8. In the west from Northland to Kapiti, including Coromandel and the central high country, occasional showers clearing this afternoon or evening. For the Bay of Plenty, Gisborne, a few showers clearing before dawn, showers returning this afternoon with possible thunderstorms and hail. Hawke's Bay, Wairarapa and Wellington, showers becoming isolated south of Hawke's Bay this afternoon and then becoming widespread again tonight. However, thunderstorms are also possible north of Napier this afternoon and evening. For Nelson, Buller and Westland, a few showers, morning showers north of Greymouth, otherwise fine weather for you fine folk. For Marlborough and Canterbury, partly cloudy, showers mainly about Banks Peninsula, clearing this afternoon. For Otago, Southland and Fiordland, showers clearing this morning. Cloud increasing this afternoon with patchy drizzle this evening. And for the Chathams, showers clearing this morning but remaining partly cloudy. The extended forecast for tomorrow, it is tomorrow, isn't it? Is today Friday? Yes, it is. Friday today. For Saturday, North Island showers becoming widespread in the north and east, some possibly heavy, partly cloudy elsewhere, with remaining showers clearing. For the South Island tomorrow, on Saturday, isolated showers in the far south, mainly fine elsewhere. For Sunday in the North Island, rain about Gisborne and Hawke's Bay clearing, mainly fine elsewhere, with the odd shower in the west, isolated showers in the South Island and the far south and the east coast, otherwise mainly fine. Looking ahead to Monday, Easter Monday in the North Island, fine weather. South Island's going to be mainly fine as well. A chance of a morning shower or afternoon. And for the Chathams, so your extended forecast, cloudy periods with southeasterlies on Saturday, a few showers on Sunday, becoming isolated on Monday, and southeasterlies turn as they turn southwest. All right, that's news from me, the world gone mad with Grant Edwards and Digger Davidson. So goodbye, Digger.
Goodbye, Digger.
Thank you, Digger. And now we are going to hear a... it goes for about three quarters of an hour. It's a very interesting recording that I have here, and it is called... first of all, we'll hear from Colonel Richard Kemp. He was... I think he ran the Expeditionary Force in Afghanistan. He also knows quite a bit about the IDF as well. And there's a lot. He says there's two types of information, really. There's the truth, and then there's all the, what the media tell you about Israel and the IDF. So he's going to fill you in there. That's just a quick clip. And then we're going to hear of the life of England's biggest robber, Ronnie Biggs. We'll hear a documentary coming up in just a few moments. It's 14 minutes past 8. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next week.
There are two views of the Israeli military. What you hear in most of the media and the truth. I'm going to tell you the truth. I was the commander of British forces in Afghanistan. I have fought in combat zones around the world, including Northern Ireland, Bosnia, Macedonia, and Iraq. I was also present throughout the conflict in Gaza in 2014. Based on my experience and on my observations, the Israel Defense Force, the IDF, does more to safeguard the rights of civilians in a combat zone than any other army in the history of warfare. Why is this so? Firstly, Israel is a decent country with Western values run on democratic principles. Israel has no more interest in war than Belgium does. In fact, Israel has never started a war. The only reason it ever goes to war is to defend itself. And it has to defend itself because, unlike Belgium, it is surrounded by countries and armed groups that want to destroy it. Secondly, Judaism, with its unsurpassed moral standards, remains a major influence on the citizens of Israel. I say this as a non-Jew. Thirdly, the army is composed overwhelmingly of citizen soldiers. Israel's a small country with a small professional army. To fight a war, it depends on its conscripts and its reservists. These are ordinary citizens, from professors to plumbers, called upon to defend their homes. They don't want to be fighting, and they don't want to harm others. Nowhere was the essential morality and decency of the IDF more evident than in the Gaza War of 2014. If ever there was a purely defensive war, this was it. The war was started by Hamas, the terror organization, designated as such by the US State Department that runs the Gaza Strip. In the first 6 months of 2014, Hamas launched hundreds of rockets at Israeli civilians. After repeated warnings from Israel to stop, the Israeli Air Force finally conducted precision strikes to halt the rocket fire. And the IDF advanced into Gaza to destroy a network of terror tunnels that Hamas had constructed to attack Israeli communities near the Gaza border. The IDF took extraordinary measures to give Gaza civilians notice of targeted areas, dropping millions of leaflets, broadcasting radio messages, sending texts, and making tens of thousands of phone calls. Let me repeat that. The Israelis called Gazans on their cell phones and told them to leave their residences and move to safety. Never in the history of warfare has an army phoned its enemy and told them where they're going to drop their bombs. Many IDF missions that could have taken out Hamas military capabilities were aborted to prevent civilian casualties, increasing the risk to Israeli citizens and soldiers. Despite all of this, of course innocent civilians were killed. Every war is chaotic and confusing, and mistakes are frequent. But mistakes are not war crimes. Hamas, on the other hand, committed war crimes as official government policy. Hamas deliberately positioned its military assets among the civilian population, hiding weapons in schools and hospitals, and placing rocket launchers alongside apartment buildings, then forced those civilians to stay in areas they knew would be attacked. They also instructed their people to report the lie that every Gazan killed was a civilian, even if they were actually fighters. And if there were no civilian deaths, Hamas made them up. Numerous internet sites show Palestinians elaborately staging sniper victims and smashed ambulances, among other phony horrors. It's so common, there's even a term for it, Pallywood, as in Palestinian Hollywood. Ironically, it's the leaders of Hamas themselves who best understand the extraordinary measures the IDF will take to protect innocent civilians. They take full advantage of Israel's decency and adherence to the laws of war. No army takes such risks in order to protect civilians as the Israeli army does. I say this as a professional soldier. I say it because it's true. And people who care about truth should know it. I'm Colonel Richard Kemp,